Okay, good morning. I have to tell you a story. Last night at about 10 o'clock, I realized I was looking on the website and I noticed that my session didn't have any themes. And so I was looking at all the Windows 8 session I couldn't figure out, and the Windows Phone session, I couldn't figure out why my session wasn't included. And for some reason, they had forgotten to put themes on my session. So I was sure that there's going to be nobody here this morning, and I was going to be able to finish early. But I guess we're going to power through. So Katrine asked me to do this session. It's a little bit different than the other sessions. The intention of this session is to give you a pretty good overview of both Windows 8 and Windows Phone development, and hopefully the combination of the two sessions. It's a lot of content. I remember the last time I did a Windows Phone session, the content... Thanks, Katrine. Perfect, thank you. The last time I did a Windows Phone session, just Windows Phone took me 90 minutes. And so as you can imagine, we only have about 75 minutes, and I'm doing not just Windows Phone, I'm doing Windows Phone and Windows 8, and I'm also trying to give you a sense of the opportunity and so on. And so there's a lot of stuff you won't see, but what I'm going to try and do is give you pointers to other sessions at this conference that you should go to that relate to different topics that I'm going to talk about. And so hopefully that will give you a good broad thing. So I'm going to power through. We're going to go pretty quickly. I'm not doing demos. I'm just going to talk about Windows 8, Windows Phone, the opportunity, and hopefully put you on the right roadmap to becoming a Windows Phone or Windows 8 developer. Okay. So I should have introduced myself. My name is Ben Riga. I'm a technical evangelist at Microsoft. I work in a group at Microsoft called Developer and Platform Evangelism, and I currently am specifically focused on Windows 8, although before I started on Windows 8 about 6 or 7 months ago, I had spent about 3 years on Windows Phone, so I have a pretty good grounding on both of those. If you want to reach me, or if you have questions, maybe you're too shy to ask questions here in the session. And if you want to protect my kitty cat, I suggest that you follow me. I have a page where you can find me on either Twitter or Facebook or Google+. You could email me there. You can find all my contact info, so anything about that. And if you don't want to do it for me, do it for the kitty. Anyway, so let's get started. So the first thing we're going to talk about is the opportunity. It's sort of an interesting one, right? If you think back 2 or 3 years ago, and this quote from Joshua Topolsky from Gizmodo, I think, is sort of reminiscent of that. Who would have thought that Microsoft would be at the forefront of design, both on the Windows and slates and all of that great stuff? And so that's what we're going to talk about. Why is this? Why? Where are we going? And the first thing that you immediately see optically when you look at Windows Phone and Windows 8 is that there is this common user experience design platform that applies both across Windows Phone, Windows 8, and in fact, if you're a gamer, you'll also have seen that it's now starting to work its way into Xbox as well. And I'm sure we'll have a lot more to say about that at some point. Again, I could do a whole session on design. I don't have enough time today. And in fact, there is someone else doing a session on design. Really smart guy from Switzerland, I think. His name is Laurent Bugnon, is doing something called putting the Microsoft Design Language to work. He's going to take all of the basic design principles that we do, that we sort of based our design on, and he's going to work through them using some very specific examples. And hopefully from that, you will learn some of the things. It's an important topic when you're building for Windows 8 or Windows Phone. The design is very different than anything else, any other platform. It's very new, and so you really want to spend some time thinking about that before you leap into building your apps. If there's one thing that you leave this session with, I hope, it's that Windows and Windows Phone and the entire Windows platform today is the single largest developer opportunity ever to exist. IDC says that we'll be on the order of 480 million devices will ship from when we started shipping in October through the end of this calendar year. That's a lot of devices. It's a brand new platform, and so as a developer, there's this huge, huge opportunity for you if you have an interesting idea, or even if you have an idea in a very specific niche, you should think about building that now and sort of owning that part of the marketplace, of the store, and so on. Now is sort of when the gold rush happens, when people start building apps and start staking their claims. So I certainly encourage you to think about that. Related to that, and sort of very important corollary of that, is that we are putting the marketing muscle behind all of those units that are going out. Whether it's on phone or Windows, you will see that we're spending a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of money on marketing. There's probably not a lot of places you can go where you won't see marketing about this stuff. And certainly some of the things, hopefully if you saw the session earlier today with Tim O'Brien, he did talk about some of the things that we're already starting to see a huge increase in phone. And we haven't talked yet about all of the sales on Windows 8. I mean, we've only seen the first 6 or 8 weeks where we announced that we had already shipped 60 million units of Windows 8 in the first, I think it was 6 weeks. So we're on a great glide path, or incline, I guess I should say, of increasing sales over time. And of course, for you, that means more users going to the store, more users downloading your apps, more users paying you money, looking at your ads, buying your content, all of that good stuff. When you think about one of the big investments that we made around Windows 8 was building this brand new distribution mechanism for the apps. And of course, we had that for Windows Phone. We've spent a great deal of time building out our Windows Store experience in such a way that it's better for you to do business. And there's a number of different things that are important here. The first one is the reach of the store. From day one, we are on order of about 191 different markets. That's a lot of people around the world. It's actually easier to count the countries that we are not in than the countries that we are. It's just pretty much anywhere in the world you can distribute your app. And also we spend a great deal of time on discoverability, building the experience around the store, whether it's on the web or in the app itself on the device, whether it's a desktop, a laptop, or a slate or tablet. This idea of discoverability and spotlighting and all of that good stuff makes for more eyeballs seeing your app, more people clicking on that ad or on that tile to go and download or look at and download your app. We've also expanded in terms of commerce models. And so pretty much any way a consumer wants to spend money, whether it's or ways that you want to build your business on, whether it's a paid app or an advertised app, in-app purchase, whether they want to pay you with their mobile operator account, or we've even recently introduced on the Windows Phone side using PayPal to pay. And even in some countries, for instance, in China, where there are very specific, or there's very few credit cards, but different types of ways that people spend money when they use their mobile apps, we're adhering to those as well. So in terms of looking across the marketplace of all of the different platforms that you can be building on, we have the most flexible way of you building on that. I mentioned this already, but it's good to point it out again, the idea of actually making apps much more discoverable. Here you have an example of the Windows Phone application. This is the panorama that the end user would see. And you can see that there's a number of different ways that we sort of entice the end user to come in and have a look, right? Of course, there's the Hero app, the first one that gets spotlighted. There's also some on the right that also get a lot of attention. But then we try and spend a lot of time trying to figure out what the end user wants based on their other things that they've done, based on other things that they've downloaded and their interests. And then we have specific collections, and then of course shortcuts into things like what are the top paid apps and what are the things that end users are going to want to see. And you'll see us refining this over time, but I think already we're at a pretty good spot in terms of making it easier for end users to find your app, especially important as the store becomes bigger and bigger and the volume of apps in the store gets bigger and bigger. The experience in Windows 8 and Windows Phone, because the experience is very similar, is very different than others that you may have seen, and it takes some getting used to, right? You're used to building apps in certain ways, whether it's for the web or for the desktop or perhaps for other platforms, and the experience in Windows 8 is much more immersive. We tend to push things that don't adhere to the content, things that are not related to the content, all get pushed off screen. And what we try to do is focus the end user on the thing that they should be thinking about and looking at right now. So things like buttons and navigational tools and toolbars, all of that stuff gets pushed off. And what that means is that every pixel on the screen is dedicated to what you need to be doing, right? Building that relationship with your customer. The other thing that we do is that we make it much easier for the end user to use your app in conjunction with other apps. The idea of sharing information between apps or having contracts between apps or searching for, while you're in one app, searching another app, doing all sorts of interesting things. I spent some time this morning talking about IE10 in the keynote. Hopefully you got a good sense that Windows 8 and Windows Phone have very high adherence to the standards, to the HTML5 standards. And so that means that you can be building to those standards and know that they will run not only well, but also quickly with high performance on these platforms. And then there's all sorts of other things, and we'll spend more time talking about some of these, but things like live tiles and notifications, the charms and contracts, all of those things are ways that you integrate your application directly into the operating system and hopefully over time allow the end user to feel like they're getting the things that they need from your app. Tim already talked about this. Hopefully you're at this conference. You already know that the Windows 8 and Windows Phone development environment, Visual Studio, as you would, I'm sure you know, is world class. We're really at a spot where there is no other tool that's as good, comes even close to the productivity that you would get from Visual Studio. And we've gone beyond just the development stuff. Brian this morning talked about the application lifecycle management piece, but also things like debugging and monitoring and profiling. All of that stuff is just standard things. And including for Windows Phone, where it's most important, the idea of having an emulator that gives you an exact duplicate of what the experience is that the end user will have without you having to deploy to a device and so on. And actually being able to tweak the environment and simulate the different things that an end user might experience, things like slower bandwidth or no bandwidth, dropping of bandwidth, changing locations, all of that stuff are things that we've built directly into the platform to make it easier for you to develop your application. There are two very specific sessions that I wanted to point out related to tooling on Windows 8 primarily. There's one from Brad Silver, who's doing diagnostic tips and tricks for building Windows Store applications, so all sorts of things that will help you figure out how to debug your application. And then finally, Kevin DeRuiter, I'm sure I'm pronouncing these wrong, and Peter Gaysens. Don't laugh if I mess up the names. They are doing a session on building, primarily around testing, unit testing, that sort of thing. As you can imagine, at Microsoft, we have this huge legacy, I guess you could call it, where one of our biggest strengths is the fact that we have a lot of experience in building apps for business and enterprise. It's something we've been doing for a long time, and you as developers working on our platform have been doing for a long time. And a lot of those things, a lot of those strengths are things that we pull in to Windows 8 as well as to Windows Phone. So the idea of building line of business apps and being able to manage applications using device managing, using MDM and that sort of thing. Being able to control who has access to your apps, whether it's a Windows 8 app that an employee might be using today, so you'll have to grant them access to it, but perhaps they leave the company tomorrow, you may want to revoke access to those apps. Those are things that are not easily done in other platforms, and again, because of our strengths there, is things that you can do rather easily with Windows. Tim mentioned this already, the idea of the shared core between Windows Phone and Windows 8. I certainly spent some time, it's kind of hard to describe and help developers understand how much they can leverage one and the other. You really see it more when you dive in and start building your applications together. But the one thing that I would say is that there is this huge convergence that's happening between Windows 8 and Windows Phone. It's starting at the API set, and you'll see that growing over time. It's not something we're hiding. It's an obvious thing that we're going to do more and more of. And so as you're building applications, you're using the same APIs, whether you're building for Windows Phone and Windows 8. This is just a natural occurrence. The programming model is also quite similar, not identical. There are some differences, and I'll talk about them more when I get into both the Windows 8 and Windows Phone areas, when I go a little deeper on those. But you can build a Windows Phone and a Windows 8 app using managed code, of course. You're still using XAML and .NET and the Windows Runtime APIs. Or you can be using C++ and native code, whether you're using DirectX or other applications. If you have existing libraries that maybe have already been developed in C or C++ and you need access to those because you don't want to port them, it's just there already. And then the idea of using HTML and JavaScript. Today, it's actually a little bit easier on Windows 8 to do that, to build apps using that. But even on Windows Phone, they have a provision for being able to build applications that can run directly within the browser and allow you to see that and to surface that as an application. There are a couple of sessions that have already been, that will happen this week. One from Richard Griffin. He's talking about building single page applications, web applications using Backbone, and then showing you how you can take that and build a Windows 8 application from it. And then Gita, who was also in the keynote earlier today, this is a sponsor session, but it sounds like a really interesting one. She's going to talk about building cross-platform mobile applications. And it sounds like she's going to be talking about more of the PhoneGap and Cordova, all of those things. But more importantly, she's also going to talk about things like MonoTouch, MonoDevelop, and the Xamarin tools, things that will make your skills, your C-sharp skills, and your Visual Studio skills very useful in that you'll be able to build not just for Windows 8, Windows Phone, but also take those skills to iOS and Android. How am I doing right now? It's been very quiet, and I haven't seen any questions yet. Do you think you guys are going to want to ask questions, or are you going to just listen? You're just going to listen. Okay. All right. Well, let me just say that if there are questions, if I miss a point or if you'd like a clarification, please don't hesitate. Raise your hand, and we'll take some time and try and answer your questions. So let's dive in. We've been talking about some of the opportunity and some of the sort of the intersection between Windows 8 and Windows Phone. I'd like to dive in and talk a little bit more about Windows 8, and then after that, we'll talk about Windows Phone as well. So Windows 8, I think if you've spent any time looking at it, is a brand new thing. There's a huge investment that we've made there. I'll talk about some of the ones that are important from a developer standpoint. But it is pretty much Windows reimagined, right? We kind of took the whiteboard, wiped it clean, and said, okay, so if we wanted to build something based on what end users are asking us for today, what would we do? And you'll see that some of the things that are the most important, of course, touch first as an interface, and yet still being able to use a mouse and keyboard and ink if that's important to the end user. So all of those things are there. The idea of having this new fast and fluid start screen that is both a beginning for where the end users begin with our applications, but also where they interact with your applications and where you entice them to come back and look at your applications. I should mention, this is something that a lot of people don't realize, but Windows 8 is just a better Windows. As at the core, if you scrape away all of that new stuff, Windows 8 is a better Windows than Windows 7 was. And if you're not going to use the start screen and all of that stuff, I encourage you to use Windows 8, even if you're just going to use it as a desktop operating system, just because you're going to love it. All of the stuff that you do today will just be easier, faster, better. So as sort of a base. And then layered on top of all of that is all of this extra cool stuff around the start screen, supporting of different devices and all of that good stuff. Touch, of course. The thing that one major investment that we've done is the investment across hardware. Of course, Windows has always been available across a very wide range of hardware. But because of the way the market is moving, you'll see that we've extended that even further. So now we go from the desktop to the laptop. We go to these very large screens now. We're starting to see screens that are literally 80 or 90 inches wide. So pretty cool stuff. And then, of course, we go to the low end as well, things like slates and so on. Some of them are using Intel processors, but we've made a big investment, is a big bet that end users would also want even other devices using the ARM processor, where you get better battery power and all of that good stuff. And then as part of making that investment, of course, that's where we also were able to take that investment to Windows 8, the shared kernel and so on. So no matter where your device is, no matter what is your scenario that you're thinking of, you will be able to use a device that uses Windows and be able to share your learning that you have on Windows on your desktop, on your laptop, on your slate, on your phone, and as I mentioned earlier, you're going to start seeing more and more of that in your living room using Xbox and so on. There are a few things that are common or that are part of the Windows experience. I've talked about a few of them already. First is that fast and fluid user experience, the idea that your application should be responsive and just beautiful, and the idea of having an application that is immersive and full screen, pushing all of the navigation away from the end user to where they can still get to it quickly, but focus the end user on what they're doing now rather than on where they might be going later. The idea of going touch first, with support for full keyboard and mouse, and I should add ink as well. And then a web of apps that are working together. We'll talk about some of those things as well. And then having this experience across all of those PCs and architectures. If we think of the investments, of course, I mentioned this earlier, Windows 8 at the core is Windows. And so you have the Windows Core operating system services. And because it's still Windows, you can still build desktop applications just like you could before Windows 8. You can build them in C# or VB, you can build them in C or C++, and you can still build using HTML and JavaScript and all of that good stuff and run them in IE and all that good stuff. All of that stuff still works, and you're welcome to continue working there, but where we spent our most of the time investing is in the Windows, the WinRT APIs. And here you'll see, this is sort of a generic grouping around the APIs, things like communications and data, graphics and media, devices and printing, and there's many others on the order of 10 or 15,000 members in the API set. It's just huge in terms of scope. This is the new APIs that we encourage you to start learning and start developing, and these are the APIs that will expand. Today, they're obviously on Windows 8. Many of them are also on Windows Phone. Not all, but obviously, over time, we'll expand that, and those two platforms will converge. In terms of development platforms, there's a few different things, and I'll talk about how we do this in a couple of seconds, but if you are today using C# or VB, then XAML is the way that you're comfortable with developing your user interface, and that continues to be the case. We've now added C and C++. Using the exact same skills around XAML, you can still use C and C++. And what we've also done is drawn in the HTML developer as well. Developers who today are building web apps, whether it's a game or other kind of app, using HTML, JavaScript, and CSS, that is now a first-class citizen, the same way C# is a first-class citizen, the same way C++ is a first-class citizen. You get the full experience of Windows 8. Doesn't matter what the language is that you choose. And the stuff on the left-hand side is all the new Windows Store applications. And then, of course, as I mentioned, the stuff that you were able to build earlier, desktop applications. The first question. The question is, what is Chakra? I should have mentioned that. Chakra is our JavaScript engine. It's just a code name that we use for the JavaScript engine. It's a super fast JavaScript engine that you don't really have to worry about it. It's just there. And when you're using WinJS, it just does all of that work for you. Any other questions? So this is a very high-level view of how all of this stuff kind of comes together. As you can imagine, the Windows runtime objects or components are all written in various things. Some of them are in C++, C#, VB, whatever they might be written in. We have built the layers so that you don't really care what they're written in. You choose the language that you're most comfortable with. It can be C#, VB, it can be C++ or C, it can be HTML and JavaScript. And then we build these projections that will project from your language into whatever the other stuff is done using the Windows metadata. And so again, we've done that in such a way that we do all the heavy lifting for you. You build your application using your skill set, and you don't lose anything in terms of performance. These projections are super high performance. You just don't see it. So again, the important part here is choose the language you want, and you'll get the performance you need. When you do think about choosing a language, there's a few good sessions that sort of run the gamut across all of these. The first one, Iris Klassen, she's doing a session. It sounds interesting, actually. I was hoping to see this. She's calling it the Windows Store App Showdown, where she's going to build the same app using C# and JavaScript and sort of compare and contrast and hopefully help you decide which one you would prefer to use or which one you will be using. And then Tarek Madkur is doing a session on using C++ to build blazingly fast Windows 8 applications. So thinking about some of the key investments, we've already talked about some of these, the runtime. We've talked about user experience. I'm going to talk about the app execution environment, and we've already talked about the store as well. So if we look at some of these, the runtime APIs, we sort of did an overview earlier. Now we're going to dive in and talk about these in a little bit more detail. At the core are the fundamentals, things like memory management and globalization and cryptography and authentication. This is sort of the basics, the fundamental stuff. Some of that stuff that we already have, but now is embedded in the Windows runtime APIs. There's also a group of Windows runtime APIs around media, whether it's playback or capture or play to, where you may want to play from a Windows device to an Xbox or to some television, that sort of thing. Devices, of course, things like geolocation and all of the various sensors that you're used to seeing on phones and devices, all of that is part of the Windows Runtime API. And then communications and data, right? Whether that's proximity sensors, Bluetooth, sockets, just networking, HTTP networking, all of that stuff is sort of grouped into communications and data. And then finally, there's the UI that gives you all of the various things that you require to build the user experience, whether that's again, using XAML for C# and C++, or HTML using HTML, JavaScript, and so on. This is sort of, normally I would spend, I could spend an hour talking about all of these things. There are some traits of a great app experience. It is something that you will have to learn over time, and you'll see it in some of the great apps that are already in the store. And hopefully your apps will try and adapt to this. The first one is try and leverage the Microsoft Design experience. It is very tempting sometimes to try and reuse designs from other platforms, perhaps other Windows platforms, whether you're building on Silverlight, WPF, or WinForms, whatever. It might be tempting to try and reuse your design in a Windows Store app. I would recommend that you pretty much start from scratch and redesign your apps from the get-go. The Windows Microsoft design for modern apps is different than anything you've done, and it requires that you rethink how you build your app and perhaps even the information architecture of your applications. Try and be fast and fluid. Try and snap and scale beautifully. As I mentioned, there's many different sizes of screens that the end users may have. Most of them, this one that I'm using right now is 1366 by 768. It's probably the smallest of screens that you'll have. But you'll quickly see that your end users may be using HD screens or perhaps even 4K screens. And all of that stuff is coming. And so you should make sure that your app resizes itself properly and scales properly so that it takes full advantage of the full screen. And then snaps as well. So as you may or may not know, the Windows 8 experience allows a full immersive experience where your app takes over the full screen. But you also have other experiences around snap view, where you have only a small part of the left-hand side of the screen or right-hand side. And then the other part, which is the fill experience. And you also need to think that the end user, because it might be on a slate, they may not always be landscape. They may actually tilt your app and make it into portrait mode for whatever reason. And you have to decide whether your app adapts to that. So these are some of the things that you have to keep in mind. We do have the concept of contracts as well. These are the idea that things like, some of the things that every app needs to do all the time, things like settings. There's now contracts that you adapt, that you make. All your settings will all be in the right place so the end user knows where to find them. Things like searching. There's a very specific search contract so that your app appears in the search experience for the end user and looks like every other app when they're searching. Things like sharing. If you're in your app and you want to share from your app to some other app, whether it's a Twitter client or whether it's to email, whether it's to some other app that does something else, or vice versa. Maybe you want to make your app a target for sharing so that end users use your app even more, right? So that they can share and take that information. It's just another way for you to integrate directly into the operating system. So think about those. It's a new concept, and so I encourage you to think about which are the right contracts that you should be using in your application. Invest in a great tile, and also related to that is feel connected and alive. So when your app has a great live tile, it's going to entice your end user to use your application more often. And by making that tile live, by bringing information to the end user before they ask you to bring the information, by giving them information about their content, then again, that encourages them to click that tile and launch your app and use your app again. And hopefully that means that they will be more satisfied with your app, they'll keep it on the start screen, and they'll buy more content from you, or hopefully they'll see more ads and so on. And then finally, the two others, roaming to the cloud. You will see that many end users have many different devices. It's no longer the case where an end user may have only one device. And so we encourage you now to roam your settings and roam information to the cloud so that if I am using my desktop at the office during the day and then I go to a meeting, I might take my laptop. I'm sitting on the couch at home. I might be using my slate and I might have my phone. These are all scenarios where that all that information needs to roam from device to device. And so rather than force the end user to refresh and bring more information and re-customize, you should try and roam that information to the cloud. And there are actually APIs that make this much easier, certainly within the Windows 8 environment, to do that. Let's talk about one of the new things that is brand new to the way that we apps get executed in memory. The first is how they get packaged and how they make it from the store onto the end user, onto the end user's device. Obviously, the end user discovers and installs the app from the store. For the most part, that is the only way that an end user will get apps onto their machine. There are some exceptions. If you're building applications for an enterprise where you want to set up your own way of sideloading applications just for your employees, that's another scenario and is certainly supported and uses some of the similar sort of pipeline. And also as a developer, you're able to sideload as well. But for the most part, this is how end users will install your apps, certainly consumers. There is a package manager. The package manager grabs that install that that Visual Studio has packaged up and you've given to the store, and then installs that into a store on the application, on the device, as well as registers information in the registry, in the registration information store. And then that can get used multiple times. If an app is installed on a device, then multiple end users on that machine can have access to that device, to that app. So what is in that app package? And Visual Studio does most of the work here, but I thought it might be interesting for you to understand that when you're using Visual Studio and it's building your AppX file, which is the package that you will then give to the Windows Store, and it gets certified and gets transported out onto the cloud where an end user will install it. There's a few interesting things here. Obviously, there's files and assets. All of your app executable, your DLLs and your media files and your localized strings and all of that good stuff. Related to that is also your manifest, which is where the information about your application is stored. There's a block map that contains hashes and various things so that we can control the security of the app. Then the app is controlled, and all of that is kept in an AppX package, which is actually just a zip file under the covers with some interesting things related to the structure of that zip file. When you are building applications, you have to explicitly declare the capabilities of your applications. And the reason we do that is because we expect that the end user will want the maximum amount of control around what the app that they install does with their information. And the way they have that control is they can see what permissions they have granted to the app. And so when they go to install an app and the app says, I'm going to track your location, and the app is trying to track email or whatever, then they'll be asking questions about why do you need to track my location if you're just doing email. So all of these capabilities are tracked and exposed to the end users. And the way you do that is that you have to put that into your manifest, and you tell the manifest exactly what are the capabilities that you'll see that. I'm not going to read through all of them, but as you can imagine, the end user, many of them will. Some of them won't, but many of them will. And so you should do that in your manifest. It's also important in that if you try to use a capability without declaring it in your manifest, your app will actually fail certification and will get sent back to you. And they'll say, well, you can't do access to document libraries if you haven't already declared that capability. And so we'll be checking for all of that good stuff. So keep that in mind. The apps that are running in the operating system, there's really only one app, sometimes two if you have a snap view, that are running in the foreground. All of the other apps are running in the background. Sorry, they're not running in the background. They're sort of dormant in the background. And again, unfortunately, I won't have time to get into that part of it, but keep that in mind. The idea of the life cycle of an application is important. What is also important is that the app is completely isolated from any other app. There is no way for you to go and look at what other apps the end user has installed or what is in the storage of some other app. All of that is completely separate and completely isolated. And the way that apps talk from one to the other is using contracts. And so you'll have to adhere to that. It's just part of the security model. It's part of how we allow the end user to maintain control. The primary thing we're trying to do is make sure that an end user never regrets installing an app, that an app doesn't do something bad for either malicious or for buggy reasons. And so what we're trying to do is make sure that if an end user installs an app and they don't like it, they can uninstall it, and there is no consequence to that. There's also a way for apps to have access to the operating system. I talk about some of them. There are direct APIs. There are also brokers that broker between you and the operating system. Those are just another way of you integrating more into the end user's device. So in a nutshell, just to recap Windows 8, if you can, in 4 points, I guess. The first one is it's an operating system. Touch first interface. Touch is a first class citizen of the operating system, but still supports full mouse and keyboard for devices that perhaps don't have touch yet. It was designed from the ground up to support many, many different form factors, from the very, very lightweight, small, low powered devices all the way up to many cores, tons of memory, big screens, all of that good stuff. The Windows Store is something that comes on every device and is the primary distribution mechanism for your apps and is sort of the way that you make your appearance on the end user's device. And then we've gone through this already. There's a number of new development models that we've built into the operating system, whether that's the Windows RT, whether that's different languages, as well as the Windows RT, the Windows runtime APIs. There is one thing that I didn't talk about, and that is background tasking. So I wanted to jump in and make sure Jeff Procise is an excellent presenter. I've seen him talk on a number of different topics, and he's talking about a topic that is kind of an advanced one. But if you're doing if that scenario of actually running apps in the foreground versus running them in the background is important to you, there are certain very specific scenarios where that's supported, and Jeff's going to go into that in a very close detail. So with that, I'm going to jump into Windows Phone, and I think I'm still on time. I want to make sure I adhere to your schedule. So what I've done, again, there's a ton of things that are important on Windows Phone. I think I mentioned this earlier. The last time I did a Windows Phone session, just talking about just the new stuff in Windows Phone 8, took me about 90 minutes, and I only have about 15 or 20. So Jeff Procise, again, the same presenter from Wintellect, is going to do a session on Windows Phone 8 that will give you a really good overview of across all of the new stuff that's coming, or that's there, actually. So I've reduced my 90-minute session down, and what I did is I said, okay, what are the top eight things? Windows Phone 8 things, get it? I thought it was clever. So what are the top eight things that you need to know? Some of the things you've already talked about, but just to reiterate, Windows Phone and Windows 8 share the exact same kernel. The kernel under the covers is the exact same operating system. And so as you can imagine, it's an important thing for us, but it's also an important thing for the future of the platform. You can imagine that over time, anything that happens on Windows 8 is going to happen on Windows Phone, and things are just going to accelerate. Things are just going to go much faster. The other thing that is important is that there is this overlap of runtime APIs. Windows Phone had been around before Windows 8 came along, so there's all sorts of APIs that are available for Windows Phone. Those are still available. They're not deprecated or anything. They're still there. But over time, you'll see us moving more towards the Windows 8, the Windows runtime. And so there's the Windows runtime, which is signified by the big red ball, and then the Windows Phone runtime, which is the combination of the Windows Phone APIs as well as the Windows Phone runtime. And I'll talk about some of the things that are in there in a few minutes. But keep that in mind, that there is this huge overlap between Windows Phone and Windows 8. And the important thing that means for you is that you can share a lot of your code. I tried to go into some of that earlier in the session today. I did want to talk about the programming APIs. As I mentioned, in Windows Phone 7, we had the .NET APIs. And so that was the primary way that you built apps for Windows Phone 7 and Windows Phone 7.5 devices. And that was primarily using C# and VB. You also were able to build games using XNA. Same sort of ideas, still based on C# and so on. And you can still continue to do that. But now in Windows Phone 8, we've sort of extended that. You can use the .NET APIs that were that are there today and will continue to be there. But now we've extended that, and you can continue to use those at the same time as using the Windows runtime APIs. In addition to that, you can also use either C++, or C# or VB with DirectX 3D graphics. So if you're building games today, we encourage you to head down the path of DirectX 3D. And there's some tooling that takes advantage of that. I'll talk about that in a few minutes. And then finally, if you are a C++ developer, then you're spending time with things like DirectX and Direct 3D using C++. And in many cases, you may even want to kick down and talk directly to the metal when you're using Win32 and COM. And then, of course, C++ can take advantage of XAML and can take advantage of the Direct 3D graphics and so on. So that sort of gives you a sort of an overview of the development tools that you have access to. Those are the primary tools that you would use for Windows Phone development. I showed this bubble or intersection chart earlier. There are a few APIs that are across both. And so if you're using things like networking or proximity, in-app purchase, sensors, in those cases, those APIs are virtually identical between one and the other. And so that allows you to build applications where you can share the code fairly easily. It's not all APIs, not all of them have made it yet. But keep that in mind. And so things like networking and proximity, all those things are there for you. When you are thinking about building for both Windows Phone and Windows 8, and I certainly encourage that if you're building for one, you should be building for the other. There are two sessions that I strongly recommend. One is Applied MVVM in Windows 8 Apps. And I realize this is a Windows 8 session, but if you're building for both Windows 8 and Windows Phone, I encourage you to start thinking about architecting your applications using the MVVM design pattern, architecture pattern, I guess I should call it. And Gil is going to go into that in great depth. This is sort of an advanced MVVM, how to apply MVVM to Windows 8. But again, if you're building using MVVM, that makes it much easier for you to port your code to Windows Phone, again, using MVVM. And then again, Laurent Bunion, is doing another session. Laurent is actually the architect and the owner of a MVVM toolkit called MVVM Lite. And he's going to spend some time going even further, not just on MVVM, but talking about how you share code and best practices in Windows 8 and Windows Phone. So again, I strongly encourage that you think about that. I think he'll be talking about some of the things that I actually mentioned earlier in the keynote, but was only able to touch for 5 minutes. He's going to spend a full 75 minutes talking about things like portable class libraries, conditional compiling, inheritance, partial classes. All of those things are sort of important and make it easy for you to do all of that good stuff. So native code, many of the games that are built today across all of platforms are built using native code. And so now you have native code on Windows Phone. Of course, we have it on Windows 8 as well. But you can build applications, sorry, not applications, but games, very specific type of application, I guess, using full DirectX and build that in such a way that you can actually port those to Windows 8 and Windows Phone. It's pretty much the same. DirectX is DirectX, and C++ is C++, so it's fairly easy. The only thing you have to worry about is screen size and form factor and all of that stuff. Because we have native code, you'll see that many of the libraries and third-party tools that have been available on the market today for other platforms, as well as for Windows 7 and so on, you'll see those now not just on Windows 8, but also on Windows Phone as well. So Havok, Audio Kinetic, Autodesk has some things coming, FMod, and then the one that everyone's waiting for, Unity. So that's, you know, that's the one that many people are building games using Unity. They've already announced support for both Windows 8 and Windows Phone. I know for a fact that it's in private beta, so you're start seeing. In fact, I know there's actually games in the marketplace today, in the store today, that are using Unity. So it's coming soon. Stay tuned. Internet Explorer is probably the third thing. I talked about this earlier. We spent a lot of time fine-tuning IE10 for Windows Phone. And so things like performance of JavaScript, 4 times faster. We doubled the feature set of HTML5 that we support. So again, the full standard of HTML5. And then things like multi-touch capabilities within IE. Yes, sir? Yes, yes. So the question was more than which platform. It is more than Windows Phone 7. But I think your question, if I can paraphrase or maybe lead, is how does that compare to other platforms? And you'll see that we're actually doing quite well and moving quickly. So yeah. I can't see you guys in the back, so if there are questions in the back, you may have to shout or maybe throw something, not too heavy, hopefully. Okay, the other thing, and Tim sort of touched on this earlier, is the idea of speech. This is something that we have had a lot of requests for, and it's something that we have a lot of experience in. We have a whole team of people that have been doing speech for quite some time, and now in Windows Phone, you have the full capability of integrating speech as well as command. So you're able to have short commands that can be spoken to your application, or you can even speak and have that speech be dictated or converted to text by the application, by the cloud service that supports that. And it also will go the other way. So if you have text to speech, we support 15 different languages. And so certainly it's a very, very common, the idea of natural interfaces using speech and touch and all of that stuff is very important today. And so I certainly encourage you to think about where you might be able to take advantage of this. It's actually a fairly easy thing to do. Yes?
Is Dutch already one of those languages?
The question was, is Dutch? I don't think it is, but come and see me afterwards and we can have a look. I should have known that. I should have checked that. I know French is. Yeah, Francais is there, but not Dutch. I'm not sure. I'd have to check. Sorry about that. The other thing is proximity, the idea of being able to use NFC to communicate from one device to another using different scenarios, right? Tap to share is a common one, the idea of having one device tap another device, and so those devices then can communicate with each other, whether it's sharing a photo or sharing a business card or just sharing a game or a location or what have you. The idea of NFC tags, of course, being able to tag similar to the way that we're doing NFC tags here at the conference, and then device-to-device communications. Related, but not exactly the same thing, is Bluetooth APIs. Usually use these together, so if you have you'd use NFC to advertise and communicate and be able to find each other, and then you would use Bluetooth to actually do the actual communication between devices. Again, Jeff Procise, he's doing a lot of speaking in this track at this conference. He's doing a full session on proximity networking, WinRT. This is applicable to both Windows and Windows Phone. And so, again, if this is a sort of a scenario that's important to you, I don't think you could find a better speaker than Jeff on that topic. So I encourage you to have a look at that one. The mapping in Windows Phone is completely different. We are now, because of our partnership with Nokia, the mapping within the devices across all devices will be the same. And it will be using some really excellent content from Navtech, which is a Nokia company. All of the maps, whether you're using it for turn-by-turn or maps or transit, all of that stuff is all downloaded so you can use it offline. Over and above that, your applications, when your applications are using those maps, you will be able to use those as well. And so you'll have full access to all of that good stuff. And then related to mapping is the new capability that we've added, which is the idea of tracking the location of the device in the background, something that we weren't able to do before, but we can do it now. Yes, sir. That's a good question and worth reiterating. The data in the maps comes from Nokia, but the maps are available on all devices. And so, for instance, the Nokia Drive, which is a really nice turn-by-turn car navigation app, is now available on all devices. So if you have an HTC or a Samsung, you have access to that as well. Any other questions? It seems like all the people who are asking questions are at the front. Oh, you asked one earlier. I don't know if I'm going to let you ask another. Yeah. No, go ahead. I was just kidding.
The background location tracker.
Yes.
Is the user notified that
So the question was, well, if I'm tracking the location in the background, is the user notified? Again, it comes back to the capabilities. And yes, of course, when they install the app, it will actually show that you're checking location. And the typical scenario there is I'm going running. I want the phone to track where I ran so I know how fast I ran, where I ran, how long, and elevation, all of the stuff that running stuff happens. So yeah, sort of important. Okay. We've done a lot of work around pictures and lenses. Lenses are special kinds of applications that extend the camera capability on the device. And so it's essentially, think of it as like on a 35 millimeter camera where you would change your lens or you would add a filter or make it do something interesting. And so that's a new capability if you are building applications or if you have an interest in any sort of imaging sort of thing, then you would be thinking about how can I include a lens. Lenses are just like other applications on the store, except that when the end user is in the camera, they appear as lenses directly within the camera user interface, and so they obviously have faster access to it. So you're not writing a separate app that then they have to launch that app to get to it. They would go to the camera and then say, oh, yeah, let me do, I don't know, tilt shift, or let me make it black and white, or whatever. And so you can do that directly as a lens. And then also we've added the capability to auto-upload pictures to a web service, whatever web service that might be. Obviously, we have our own SkyDrive, but if you have your own web service that perhaps you're building for, or if you have one you prefer, you can now build that capability directly in, and it would integrate at the lowest level so that the end user would just be able to choose your own web service. And then the final thing, and probably at the core, and it's what most people think of when they think of Windows Phone and also Windows 8, is the start screen, right? The idea of having all of these tiles. And I would even back up and say not the start screen, but my start screen, because it's going to be different for every user. And we've spent a lot of time enhancing and changing and refining the start screen, both for the consumer as well as for the developer. And so one of the things that we've had a lot of requests around is having different types of tiles that the developer can do. And now we've All of the standard tiles that we use in our own applications are now available to you as a developer. So the iconic one is the one that developers were always asking for. That's the one that the email one is, where you have just sort of the glyph or the icon there, and then a big number. That is now something that you can just adhere, use a template, and that template then adheres to the standard, and it would just look good and just works well. The flip tile is similar to what we already had in Windows Phone 7, and then there's now a new cycle tile where you'd have many different images, and those images would automatically be cycled through in an interesting and pleasing way by the operating system. That's the one that we use for our photo application, but can be used for other scenarios as well. So those are all available to you as a developer, so I encourage you to do that. One of the things that you should keep in mind is that whereas before we had two tile sizes, but only one of them that was available to you as a developer, now there are three tile sizes and all of them are available to you as a developer. And so your tile can now be sized by the end user. The user has full control over what size your tile is. It can be small, which is sort of a quarter size, and the medium, which is what the tile used to be size, and now you can have the double wide size where you can have much more content. And all of these would also have these different templates, right? So it doesn't really matter what the tile size is. It's up to you to decide the tile size as well as the template of the tile type. Yes, sir? So the question was, well, why didn't you just do this 2 years ago, I guess, if I can paraphrase. And I don't have a good answer for you, but I suspect it had more to do with we had a long list of things to do, and sometimes things are below the line, they get cut, and then they get pushed to the next version. So, yeah, thanks for being patient. Okay, the other thing, this is kind of cool, is the idea of the lock screen. That's the screen that you see when you first turn on your phone. Usually it's an image in the background, and right now, or before in Windows Phone 7, it had the date and time, and had your calendar, and then your email accounts as well as your messaging, your text. Well, this has now been opened up, so you as a developer have full access to making these changes. So you as a developer can now have an app that changes the lock screen background on a regular basis. Lots of different scenarios there. I've seen scenarios where people would change it, and so if the weather tomorrow is going to be rainy, you might want to let the end user know that. Or if your sports team is doing well, you might want to update the screen to show different images and so on. So those are all things that you have full access to. The lock screen text, where in Windows Phone 7 that was your calendar, your next meeting, you can now, the end user can choose to change that and make that available to you as a developer. And you can do there whatever you choose to do there. And then also the lock screen notifications. Whereas before it was your email accounts as well as your text or messaging accounts, now the end user can choose your app to do different things. So if your app is important to them and they want to see it on the lock screen, that's where they'll see it. And they have full control over which ones appear there, obviously within limits. I think it's five, a limit of five are available on that lock screen. I'm going to stop there because I'm almost out of time and I did want to leave some time for additional questions. And I just got the hook is getting ready to get pulled out there. There's a ton of other things across all of Windows Phone and, of course, around Windows 8. So I encourage you to go to some of the other sessions. I did want to spend some time talking about push notifications. Nick is actually going to talk about that. But not just push notifications, but Windows Azure Mobile Services, which is push, but all sorts of other things. So it's a very easy, quick way for you to stand up a server in the cloud that's going to keep your data and make it available to your apps, whether they're Windows Phone or Windows 8 app. There is no faster way for you to get your server data running in the cloud. And then notifications, as Nick showed today, whether you're showing notifications to Windows 8, Windows Phone, or even iOS and Android, it's just an easy way for you to send that data to the cloud and have the cloud take care of those notifications. We do all the heavy lifting for you. Authentication, as Nick showed earlier, There is a very easy way for you to authenticate, whether it's using Facebook or Twitter or Microsoft account, or there was one more that I forget. But the idea there is you can allow your end user to authenticate into your app using some identity that they may already be comfortable and familiar with. You can make that available to them, and we do all of that work for you. Server logic, the idea of having tasks or scripts run in the cloud, doing things that are important to you when they happen, being triggered by events, by data events. And then things like diagnostics and logging, that's the obvious place to do that, is to push it up into the cloud. And then finally, doing all of those things and being able to do it in a way that just scales. That's the best part about the cloud, is that you don't really care, right? You can start off with a mobile service that has a dozen end users, and then if your app becomes a hit, suddenly you have thousands, maybe tens of thousands, hopefully hundreds of thousands of users, and then you have to worry about, well, how do I scale that quickly? And Windows Azure Mobile Services does that admirably. I should mention Nick. He's the gentleman that did the keynote demo. He's actually going into this in much, much, much more detail. And so I encourage you to spend some time with Nick. Okay, so what do I do next, I guess, is the question. Well, the thing I would encourage you to do is to publish. Build an app and publish it. Right now, today, we can publish to 191 markets, whether it's free or paid, and they're different. I actually have the links there to where you can actually go and see all of the different regions across. But pretty much, as you can see by the color blue, it's pretty much the globe, right? There's a few little markets where we don't publish to, but pretty much anywhere in the world. So keep that in mind. You monetize on your own terms. And so not only do you have access to all those markets, you have access to different ways of selling your applications, whether it's a fully paid app, whether it's a in-app advertising, in-app purchase. The other thing that we do that no other platform does is trial applications. And this is something that we found increases the number of users dramatically. And then finally, we also allow things like mobile operator billing. We've also added things like PayPal billing. All of those things are things that we will continue to refine. The important thing, of course, is you monetize on your own terms. And so that all adds up to a better monetization equation. You'll make more money faster, more, better, all of that good stuff. More revenue, more reach, more payment coverage. That means you make more money, more, better, I guess. So next steps, this is sort of an eye chart. So I am going to make these slides available. I'm not sure where, but I think that the conference will make them available. If they are not available, then I encourage you to follow me. Do it for the kitty. And if you have any questions, including questions about any of the stuff I talked about today, or pretty much anything related to Windows Phone or Windows 8, please reach out to me on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, email, wherever you want to reach me. I'm there, ready, willing, and able to answer your questions. And I guess I have 6 minutes to take questions, if there are any. Yes?
And the GPS tracking is running in the background.
Yes.
Is it possible to send the data to
So the question is, if the GPS service is running in the background, can I use that application to send the data somewhere, to a cloud service or somewhere? You can. You have to be careful, though, because those are two of the most expensive things for battery. The GPS and turning on the radio are very expensive in terms of battery usage. And so you may end up draining the battery because you're doing so much. Right? So again, you can do it, but you have to be careful, cognizant, because the worst thing you want is for the end user to click the uninstall button on your app. Okay, one more question, sure. I think you're the only one asking questions now, so.
On the Windows Phone.
Yes.
Start screen and the overview of the app.
Yes. Yes.
I noticed when I installed several apps, that suddenly the letters appear, A, B, C.
Yes.
But I don't want that.
Ah.
I'm not, but don't find the...
Okay, yeah, so the question is, if I, there's a number, when you first get your Windows Phone, and there's two screens. There's the start screen, which has all the tiles, and then there's the all apps screen, which is all the apps that are installed on the device. On the all apps screen, when you don't install any more apps, the apps are just in a list. And then when it hits a certain number, I think it's 45 apps, it will trigger a thing where it will actually have a jump list. So you can jump quickly to different letters. And our data shows that it's just much easier, much faster to navigate. You know, if you're at the top and suddenly have 50 apps that you need to scroll through, it's just much easier to hit the jump list and then jump to the Z's and get to your apps quickly. It's just a productivity thing, and unfortunately, there's no option to turn that off. Yeah. It does take a little bit of space, sure, but you probably, if the apps are important to you, you should pin them to your start screen, and then if they're not important to you, then they probably, you're not spending a lot of time in the all apps list, right? So usually you're in there, you know exactly what you want, you tap, you get to it, you launch it, and then you're out again. So anyway, it's a productivity thing. Dutch is not supported in speech. Oh, you already checked? Okay, so someone checked for me. Dutch is not supported, so thank you and sorry. Any other questions? Actually, I have 2 minutes, so maybe one more question? Okay, so I'm going to give you 2 minutes back. I'm going to hang around for a few more minutes if you were too shy to ask questions. More than happy to take them. And again, please follow me. Do it for the kitty. And I'll see you on the stream. Oh, thank you.